It's the top of the hour, and I want to welcome everybody to Pit Stop, your fortnightly midweek rest area to refuel your drive. I'm Karen Cummins. I'm an audiobook narrator, and I'm the chief cartographer for narratorsroadmap.com, and I'm your host for Pit Stop. With me today in the co-pilot seat, as always, is my lovely friend and award-winning audiobook narrator, Anne Flosnick, who hosts the Narrator Uplift Show here on Clubhouse. How are you this afternoon, Anne?
Great. Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Every other Wednesday, audiobook narrators who have vocations beyond narration pull into Pit Stop. They're sure to inspire you to follow your interests and use all of your talents and gifts. I want to let everybody know the conversation's being recorded, so you'll be able to re-listen or catch parts you missed. Feel free to comment in the chat, raise your hand in the app if you want to be part of the conversation, because we would love to hear from you. So thanks so much to everyone for joining us. I am super excited to welcome Daniela Accetelli to Pit Stop. With an extensive portfolio of over 200 audiobooks, Daniela is a born and bred American, but she's also a dual citizen Brit who calls both California and London home. Daniela works from her fully equipped home studio with authors, producers, and publishers, including Tantor Audio, Hachette UK, HarperCollins, Simon & Schuster, Brilliance, Dion, and Dreamscape. Daniela is a classically trained actress with a strong foundation in Stanislavski, in addition to training in Strasberg method acting and Meisner. Daniela is also a trained red-nosed clown, and she has worked the boards in theater, cabaret, and burlesque for years. By day, Daniela narrates, and by night, she is the host of the hugely popular quirky YouTube show, The Narrator's Cup of Joe, where she interviews wonderful, eccentric characters from the audiobook world. So welcome to Pit Stop, Daniela. We're so thrilled you're here. We needed a Daniela fix.
Yes, we did.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm honored.
We love
you. Well, you know, Anne and I talked with you last year on her Narrator Uplift, and I remember your father was Italian and your mother was American, and you said you spent summers in Italy where it was all balconies and cigarettes and gorgeous women and beautiful men and photographers. See, I'm so excited. I told you I can't talk. And late nights. And then we'd go back to Fresno. So tell us what that was like, living here and there and having that kind of childhood.
I've kind of come to terms with that. I think over the last few years, it's come up. I think when your parents pass away, you start to kind of, you have to assess who you are, like not as their child. Mm-hmm. And I realized that having grown up with that, it was like literally a La Dolce Vita lifestyle. I mean, massive glamour and, you know, and style and fashion and clothes and clubs and probably things a child shouldn't have been at. And I tend to compare all the boring parts of life to the way life should be. I still do that, but I stand by it as well. You know what I mean? I've accepted. I'm just never going to be the girl that's going to be normal.
Now, boring and beige are two words that we would never use to apply to you.
Thank you very much. And likewise, which is why I'm such a fan of both of you.
So what was it that you wanted to do? I know when you talk to people on Cup of Joe, one of the things I think you typically ask people is, tell me about what you wanted to do or what was your favorite activity when you were a 10-year-old. So what was yours?
I was an actress. My favorite song was I'm the Greatest Star. I like sang it 24 hours a day. I was an actress. When you dress up at your parents' house, like our grandmother had Thanksgiving and everything, very conservative, you know, American grandmother, and the kids would dress up. We'd all dress up in my grandmother's lingerie and do vaudeville shows by the kitchen table.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was, that was me. I was going to be the greatest actress in the entire world and also go overseas to France in high school with my gorgeous boyfriend and look fabulous. Those were like lofty dreams, I guess.
Because you didn't, did you? You didn't go overseas until you were a little older, right? I mean,
yeah, I didn't. It gutted. But I did later. I made up for lost time.
Well, so you were doing acting then as a young age, and in the intro, I was seeing about Stanislavski and Meisner. So how did you get into those things? Did that come in college or through some other means? Or
to be honest, I was in children's theater and then in college, you know, I did acting, and after college I took Meisner was a standalone course in LA, and most of my adult life I just kept for the sake of learning. I mean, the thing is, I've never been very good at doing things for like the goal. I've always wanted to do it for learning, mm-hmm. for the process of getting mm-hmm. there. That's the part that interests me. I read those books about actors. I never thought like, you know, I'm going to succeed. I didn't even know what the Academy Awards were. They just annoyed me. They preempted my TV shows. And
they still do.
These people?
Yeah,
exactly.
They still do that.
but now I can control it. Now I've got like mm-hmm. digital. So, but to me, it was the being in it, not the being seen as successful, but the getting to do the things you want to do, getting to like people going, oh, Daniela can handle it. That's like the dream. We'll give this to Daniela because she can, you know, that's the dream, not the, ooh, Daniela has more likes and friends and followers. And I've met famous people and they don't seem very happy.
What, you know, I have to ask then, who's the most famous person you met?
Oh, I'm horrible because I like literally don't remember anything 3 minutes after. And I lived in LA too. And there were a few people I'm embarrassed to say that like I met and I didn't know who they were. Mickey Rourke I met, who I quite liked because I was a fan of 9 1/2 Weeks. I thought he was so handsome in 9 1/2 Weeks. But when I met him, he was different than I imagined. I'm sure he's still wonderful, but yeah, I met Mickey Rourke. I can't remember.
Who?
I'm horrible with names. Mickey Rourke, 9 1/2 Weeks.
Oh, right. Well, I thought you said something else.
No,
then.
Mickey Rourke. I can't think of. That's embarrassing. I'm going to get off this call and I'm going to think of like 30 people that I've met. Oh, I was in a TV sitcom with Jennifer Saunders.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's pretty exciting. How did that happen?
I was Dodgy Goth Prisoner #4. And not much of me actually showed up on camera, but I did spend many days filming in a prison yard. Freezing.
Oh,
it was fun.
But how did that come about?
I was with an agency in London called Ugly. And they would put me in all these jobs. They got me one job. And I just would rock up. I'm good if I don't know what I'm getting into. That's when I do well. And I would just rock up. So I rocked up to this job and they were like, no. And they were sending me home and I was on my way out the door and they said, no, swap this over. And they swapped me with this other girl. And they said, because the other girl was too pretty.
What?
Yeah. So I guess I wasn't too pretty, but it was like a lingerie shoot for like, you know, women that weren't like models for Marks and Spencer.
Oh.
And we got to wear all the lingerie. And did this big lineup. And then the next day I got on the tube to go to my corporate job and people were kind of looking at me.
Oh, it's that girl.
It was a full page spread in the Sun.
Oh, wow. And you didn't know this?
And it was like me, like practically naked, like not burlesque. Like, I mean, I had a discreet You know, I like to think gorgeous lingerie, but still not on the tube. And then the copy guy's like all wink, wink, nod, nod, raising his eyebrows.
Oh my gosh.
That's really embarrassing.
So you didn't know when you did the shoot that's how they were going to use the images.
Didn't have a clue. I just knew that. And I was the voice of Hillary Clinton for the Yalta summit, evidently.
Well, that's pretty cool.
For the anniversary. Yeah. So all those things, you go with an agency and you never know where you'll end up. They were great. I loved Ugly.
You're saying that in past tense, so you're not still connected with them.
Well, I think the last time I had like a fracture, I fractured my hand. And I was going into surgery and I had my phone next to me and they called. And I was like literally just drugged up on my way into surgery. And I said, I don't think I should do anything. Let me get back to you guys. And I started doing audiobooks. So I just never had time. So I never went back and did anything with them.
And what a perfect segue you gave me. So how did you get from the questionable ad for Marks and Spencer to audiobooks?
I mean, I'd been listening to audiobooks since they were cassette tapes. Mm. I used to get them from the library and listen to the Agatha Raisin, Penelope Keith, and all the Harlan Cobens when I would take my walks in LA.
I think Anne's first books were on cassette.
They were, yeah.
I listened to them though in the car though on the way to work. Yeah.
I bet I've listened to you, Anne, when I was like, I didn't kind of put audiobook narrators together as like being actual human beings.
Yes.
Like, do you know what I mean? You were like out there in the ether somewhere. And yeah. I bet I listened to you. I bet you were one of the voices that I listened to because you do a lot of the books that I was obsessed. I would listen to everything. And I've listened to an audiobook pretty much every night of my life since then.
Mm.
But I never really understood that like it was an option for me.
It's funny you said that because there was a server at a restaurant we went to, and this was in recent years, it was in our other house. So it was at least 6 years ago, probably, but she said, well, what do you do? You know, we go there all the time. She's like, well, what do you do? And I said, I'm an audiobook narrator. And she said, really? I thought they were like unicorns. I didn't know that was real people who did that.
Yeah, you don't, because the stories, like, you know, I thought Rockford Files and Columbo, I thought they were like my relatives. And I thought Lucy was my aunt. Like, I suspend belief when I watch something. I don't watch it with a critical mind. I don't listen to an audiobook analyzing the narration, which is why I don't listen to a lot of audiobooks with people I know, because to me, I want to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to believe it. I want to believe that whoever's, you know, telling this, I don't want to think about who the actor is and how they're going to accept their award. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Lucy was a great aunt.
Yeah, we'd all like to have her in our family tree.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
But that's so interesting you say that, because when I listen to books, and my habit has fallen off because I used to listen every day when I walked Yogi, and he passed away earlier this year, and I don't want to talk about that, obviously, and we're not here to talk about that, but when I listen to books, whether it's somebody I know or somebody I don't know, I am listening to how are they telling the story, because I do feel like every audiobook you listen to, especially as a narrator, is a masterclass. And so it's interesting to me that you can let go of all the technical aspects of the job and actually still step back and enjoy it just as a listener. And
yeah,
I don't mean it just, you know, as a listener, but you know what I'm saying.
No, but it is just, I am two completely, entirely different people. To me, that's work. And I'm quite capable of it. And I have listened to audiobooks to learn at different times, but never when I listen before I go to bed to an audiobook. That is my sacred time. And I'm an audiobook listener. I'm not a narrator because if I'm analyzing it for work, I'm not getting lost. And the whole point is to be lost to me in the story, which is what I would hope to be able to do for people that listen to the ones that I do. and which is what I hope to do. To me, it's the same thing as in the technical aspects of the job. Yes, I will learn it, but my goal is to never, ever think about it when I'm in the booth, because then I've lost connection. See what I'm saying? So to my mind, it's really black and white. If I start going through that spiral of analyzing things or using that part of my brain, I stop acting. I stop being there. And it's the same with audiobooks at night. If I start analyzing it, I'm not relaxed into it. Right? Have you ever... I don't know if this is, I'm afraid to bring this subject up because I'm afraid like 8 million people are going to like crucify me. But to me, it's like a different thing than AI. It's to me a totally different thing, but I'm fascinated by it and I'm fascinated. It's informing my audiobook. You know how gamers do virtual reality headsets?
Yes.
Okay. So I've never tried those. I'm not interested in the gaming thing. That whole gaming world is just not interesting to me. But I signed up for a trial where it's a virtual reality headset. Oh. And they run you through meditation apps. Oh. And you put the thing on, and I've never experienced, it's like I was sitting there the other day going, oh my God, real, oh my God. It's so realistic. You're like in a forest and you can like literally, it's every sense. It blocks out everything else. And as an adult, I think we find that harder. Like, yeah. So it's like being a little kid again. And it's, I think there's a way, I'm going to do the homework on this. It's like a 12-week thing and you go through meditation while you're in this calm, peaceful surrounding. They've got sunrise, sunset. It's amazing. And if you look at virtual reality meditation apps, there's like you go to these beautiful places and you can literally almost feel the leaves under your feet.
Jeepers.
I've never experienced anything like it. It was like being a little kid again. It was the most freeing thing without the distraction of anything else. You're just in this like wonderland. But it's not like you see virtual reality like cartoons. It's like real.
Yeah.
Real thing by a lake with it. And yeah, so I'm buying one the minute the trial's over because I want to, like, I think if we can like develop that focus, that ability to focus and be completely immersed in our senses and in the energy of the moment, we could do something astounding when we narrate. And I think that that's the key. Mm-hmm. That's the hardest thing for me. And I think it's the key. I was listening to January Lavoie and I was struck by when she narrated, this was me analyzing, you know, I meant to listen to the book, but I started analyzing the narration. She was very much pinned to the exact moment.
What was the book? The first,
I can't remember. God, you guys, I'm sorry. I'm really...
You didn't know you were going to be tested on this.
I couldn't be a good name dropper if I tried because, like, I can't remember anything. Deep, Deep Snow, I think.
Oh.
I might be wrong, but I think it's called Deep, Deep Snow. Mm-hmm. But and I haven't listened to the whole book, but it was just the being completely attached to that moment. And I think you lose it when you grow up. Because the world's trying to pull little pieces of you all the time. And your brain's like just frantically going, hold on. What was I doing? What was I thinking? Maybe that's just me. But
no, it's even worse now because of our fragmented attention from our computers and phones.
Yeah. And maybe I find it a bit ironic that I'm finding my cure for being over digitized is completely digitizing. But it was astounding. It was the most joyful feeling on earth because you're just out of the world for a few minutes. It was amazing. And, you know,
there are those people who don't see images. They can't actually visualize those mental images. In fact, I even looked it up that they have what's called aphantasia because they don't get those pictures. And I think it was Dan Musselman, who, when he's retired, but he worked for Penguin Random House. And I think I'm quoting, attributing this quote correctly to him, attributing, see, I'm so excited, I told you. I think I'm attributing this quote correctly to him when he said, if a narrator can run that image and that movie in their mind, then they are connected to the material. And they will be able to tell that story because they're seeing it in their mind.
Yeah, I had an experience with a multicast recently with the most amazing, oh my God, every single person on it was amazing. And they were lovely and the emails were brilliant. And my character was kind of paranoid and going slowly, completely losing it. And I remember I read an email after I'd finished my bit from one of the people, and I was like, what did she mean by that? What did she mean by that? And then I got busy. And the next day I went and looked at the email. It was perfectly fine. I realized I was feeling paranoid because you're feeling the part. And I know it sounds precious and smarmy, but isn't that what we do, right? Leave ourselves open to feel the part. Mm-hmm.
About how much money does this cost, Daniel?
Not that I went down the rabbit hole of VR headsets, but because this one was free, because it's part of the trial. Yeah. You have to do homework and say how you feel at the end. They walk you through feeling cognitive therapy while you're in the rooms, in the different rooms. But you can do the apps, and there's one coming out with Apple that, oh my God, it's like a thousand something pounds or dollars. But there's one, the one that the trial uses is, am I allowed to say names and stuff like that? Not that I'm selling anything. The one that the trial uses is called Quest 2. And I guess it's been around for ages for gamers. But I want the Quest 3. And the Quest 2 is $300 or $400 or something. And the Quest 3 is maybe 500. But I'm thinking if you're going to get something like that, I'd rather, maybe a couple extra. I'm going to save in the piggy bank and stop wasting money on silly things like pink faux fur, because I really want this.
I can see why. And the images I'm getting are somewhat biblical, not to sound ridiculous, in that I think a lot of losing the magic and the connection can come from fear. Which is, I think, connected to a loss of innocence. Because as soon as, the real world comes in, when we lose innocence as a child, that's where the rot sets in.
Yeah. And that it's our protection, isn't it?
Yes.
It's all the defense mechanisms. Our brain wants us to survive. Our brain doesn't want us to be happy. No. It just wants us to survive.
Yes, so, and reproduce, preferably.
Let's scratch that second dictate. No. Surviving is good.
The problem is that a lot of things that make us happy involve light risk.
Yes.
And our brain sees that as danger. So you're right, Anne. It is the loss of innocence. I want to reclaim, because I think that innocence is why children play. So realistically, is what we need to do as actors is reclaim that innocence. And that cutting off all the other senses and forcing my brain to be somewhere else forced my brain to remember what delight was.
Yes.
And I'd forgotten.
Yeah, this sounds like magic. It really does.
I'll send you the link. There's a link I found on a YouTube that goes over all the meditation ones. And I'll send you the one right at the point where it shows the one that I want to buy the app. You can buy lots of apps, but this one is beautiful. It's gorgeous.
Thank you. Well, how exciting.
It's no wonder to me that you were so taken by this virtual headset and watching these realistic videos. Because you are a video queen yourself with Narrator's Cup of Joe. I mean, you've got over 180 of these now. And I mean, just even looking at the titles of these are very inspirational. There was one from July 19th with Anne Flosnick called How to Create Your Own Success. And then I've talked with you and you called mine what you focus on is important. So focus on what you want, not what you lack. And also another one was people spend more time planning their vacation than they do planning their lives. And mm-hmm. you are so gifted in pulling out like one salient thing that each person said that can apply to everybody and get people interested. So what actually started you on doing these shows? Why did you decide to do them?
Well, I mean, you'd mentioned that question before the call, so I actually stopped and thought about it for the first time, and because nothing, and if I had planned anything, it would never have happened. So basically, I was on the big group, and everyone was complaining when they took away the payment for the codes, and everyone was complaining about the new people coming in, and everyone was like, they're coming for our jobs, and this was before, like, right when COVID started, I think.
Sounds like a regular Tuesday, actually, but
yeah. And it was so heavy. It was just so heavy. And I know for a fact, I'd already started like five or six narrator groups of like seven or eight people, and we all became friends and supported each other. And I have a short attention span. I start the group and then I flake off, and then they all stay friends and do great, amazing things. But so it's a fact that you're not jealous of, and you don't have bad feelings of scarcity when someone's your friend, when you know them. So I thought, well, let's just do this, see if anybody wants to get together, and we'll talk, and we'll do the old school cup of Joe calls, which is how it started. And we would get together, seven of us. And the rule was, you only say what's on your mind. You're not asking questions. You're not teaching a class. You have to say, like, you're running into a cafe and your best friend who you haven't seen in years is there, and you're going to dump out all the exciting stuff that's happening to you right this moment in your life. Good, bad, I'm unhappy. And anything that stays in that call, that happens in that call, stays in that call, and everyone gets a space. And by the end of each call, it was just this wonderful feeling of true friendship. We were truly friends, mm-hmm. each of us, all from different levels. And then I said something to someone and about how interesting what they were saying was. They were describing, you know, something, I don't know. And they didn't believe me. And I just thought, why don't people see themselves the way I see them? Can't they see this like amazing? And somebody else said something to me about, oh, well, Daniela, you're the queen of hyperbole. And I'm like, what hyperbole? This is how I see you. I don't understand the problem. So I thought, well, let me get on a show. Let me just do a one video, you know, an hour, and people can watch it. I didn't even think of putting it on YouTube at first. And I'll show you guys what I see in this person. And the first few calls, we had technical problems. They didn't even go up, I don't think. But then other people wanted to come on. I kept saying, well, I'm only doing one more call. Then another person, then another person, then another person. Next thing you know, I'm booked like a year ahead, and I don't want to let anyone down. And it's kind of addictive, because right. I can see how nervous people are. And some people even say, I always get the email. I get the ones that send me the list of things that we should discuss. And then I get the ones that kind of reach out because they're nervous. They're like not sure what they have to say that anyone would want to listen to. And every single time, bar none, by the end of the call, we're best friends. And they're happy. And they've shared some of their energy and knowledge and wisdom, because they all have it, that profoundly touches me and changes my life. And so I've just never stopped, because each call I learn something new and become better. And I just think some people get therapists for 12 years. I just pick up random strangers.
You make it sound that way, but you really are a fantastic interviewer.
Yeah, gifted.
Thank you. Well, but I'm not doing anything. It's in them. It's already in them. And all I'm doing is listening until that moment that they say the one special bit of wisdom or knowledge or gold that's in them.
It's even in the introduction, though, Danielle, that you set them up, you set everybody up for success.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've seen it. You have grasped their essence, I think, before they, you know, they're even there. And then the whole thing just develops from that great footing.
That's but see, I have, but I don't understand why everyone else hasn't. That's what's so weird to me. like, I mean, I could point to anyone and I could say, oh my God, the thing about them is, mm-hmm. I mean, you guys know that, don't you? You have friends where you're just like, wow.
Oh yes. Yeah. And, but it's one thing though, to see all that, but then you are dedicated to that. And you do it week after week after week after week. And I'm sure it's consumed a great deal of your life to the betterment of us all. But there's a price is paid for everything.
And even more of her life, because don't you edit these things before you post them on YouTube?
See, that's the thing. The there hasn't really been a price once I learned how to fit it in. To my. The rule was it can never, ever, ever get in the way of my narration. Mm. I'm a narrator first and foremost, and that comes first. And that's my focus and my priority. And so that was the rule. And it was all fine, but it got a bit much because the schedule got really full and I ended up doing two calls a week most of the summer. Mm. And all that would still be fine if then life doesn't hit you. Then last week I fractured my knee, my ribs, and my shoulder. And I'm narrating the hardest book I've ever done in my entire life. I think I'm up to like 8 hours of research from just the first six pages. I thought it should all be done before the book.
We've all had those kind of books.
Yeah. So when life gets in the way, the editing suffers. I've got some people waiting for their videos to be put up from over a month, and I do have to catch up and slow down the amount of calls I have because the editing is a problem. I know people, you want to see your call up. You've done this interview and it's like a month and nothing's come up. So I do feel pressure.
You could post it without editing. You could post it. This is how it happened.
Yeah. No, because I owe it to them to do a professional. People want to be seen in the best light. And so it's got to be well edited. And also the branding and the show and the look of the show, you want consistency. You don't want a lack of quality.
You need to add those elements, sure. But I'm just talking about like real time editing is very tedious. Yeah.
It is. It's a lot. And when you do a call and you didn't have the best night and you worry about how you sounded, and then you have to listen to it again.
And again.
You know, but it's not about, I have to remind myself it's not about me, and people are very patient and they've been lovely and we'll have some great calls come up when I do have time. But I have had to ask for people's patience because the narrating has to come first. It's the only thing I care about, like basically at the end of the day.
But you're giving us a gift because for that hour or whatever, we can see ourselves in a magical light. But beyond that, Daniela, are you okay? Because tell us about being hit by that rogue on the bicycle. Are you all right? What happened?
Well, I think I like to take lessons away from everything that happens. And the two lessons I'm taking away from this, the one lesson was that everyone commented about the bike guy, which was lovely. Everyone was supporting me and everything. I literally hadn't given him a second thought. What I had was shocked by was the kindness of the three people that helped me.
Oh, God.
They stopped and they helped me and they took their time and they were just lovely. And that's going to leave a lasting impression to me. The other thing is just like, there's angry people in the world. I got in the wrong place, wrong time. Guy doesn't know me. He wouldn't recognize me probably ever. And I wouldn't recognize him. You know, it was random and it wasn't personal, but three people, that wasn't random. They stopped. And it was hard. I couldn't get up and they helped me. And the friend that I messengered, I won't say names, but like just the people that are there to help, I think, are the thing. And then the other thing I took away from it is the way I behave when I couldn't walk, I couldn't get out of the flat, I couldn't get to A&E because I was afraid of being taken out on a stretcher. And I was freaking out about this book and the deadline. And I have to find this is something I have to work on. I don't know the answer yet, and I need to work on it myself. I have to find a way to retain the part of me that's really proud of working hard through anything, no matter what, and not be stupid. Mm-hmm. Because I'm standing there on a fractured knee trying to still work. Do you know what I mean? I can't.
Yeah. Risk, you said. Did you share this with your publisher?
Yeah, I did. Good. Finally, good. Somebody, I think it was Stephanie Nemeth Parker, said to me, you need to email them now and tell them what happened.
Yeah.
And I did. And they gave me a few extra days. And with any other book out of the 200 I've ever done, I would have been fine and I would have been done. But this book.
Working through anything is really, in the big picture, and I know you know this, a cost to your health, because whatever you've got this going on that's made you ill or you're in pain or whatever can only be made worse by pushing through it and ignoring it.
Yeah. And painkillers just make you, like, they gave me painkillers. I finally had to, because I was shaking with it, and I took it. Like, it was like codeine or something, like one night, and the next day I was like a zombie. Mm-hmm. So it's not worth it. I can't even take the painkillers. So it's like, but then part of me is like, do I want to be this person? It's like, ooh, I work so hard and then I feel extra what? Sorry for myself, proud of myself. I think you have to decide who you want to be. And this time I have to sit with myself and decide, who do I want to be when bad things happen? Who do we think of ourselves as? I'm very conscientious and I don't want to lose that. I will deliver if I at all possibly can, and I don't want to lose that. But
I don't think you would. But you know, you've seen the stories of people on their deathbeds ask, what do you regret? And nobody ever says, oh, I wish I'd done a bit more work. You know, I mean, life is for living, and there. You're conscientious and you will meet those deadlines, but you have to make allowances for things happening. And it's not good to work through pain or illness, because it can only get worse, is what I think.
Yeah. It's a weird thing, isn't it? It's what Anne said about the loss of innocence. When you grow up, it's all on you to decide how sick is sick.
Mm-hmm. Very wise.
And I wanted to go back. Laura English wanted to ask if someone can help you with the editing part of your shows.
Part of me, I will confess in a public forum, that it is bad management, because I could outsource some parts of the editing, but I haven't found the time to take time to show someone else how to do it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is most of what I'm doing in the editing is taking out the inappropriate things that I say during the calls.
And you're the only one that can decide that, right?
Exactly.
Oh God. And there lies the rub.
Yeah, exactly. But it's fine. I can catch up on it. Oh, actually, Karen Cummins gave me the biggest break in my editing. I shaved like 50% of the time off of it, actually. One of your miracle hacks. Yeah, I don't do it with Sonics, just because that would get really, really expensive, the amount that I have to do. But now what I do is I put the video up on YouTube, but privately, so no one can see it.
Ah.
The minute the call's done, it automatically transcribes it. I cut and paste the transcription into Word. Mm-hmm. And then whenever I edit the call, I do a word search for edit. And I've gotten pretty good. If I say inappropriate things, I'll say, okay, I'll edit this out during the call. Mm-hmm. That gives me a timestamp. And I can just edit out all the bits where I've said that where I knew I shouldn't say something, but I did anyway.
Mm-hmm. So, and just for those who don't know, sonics.ai, and I put the link in the chat, it's actually my affiliate link. So if you use it, you get free minutes and I do too. But it's an AI transcriber. And this is one version or one instance where I think AI is a really good thing because it can transcribe audio and video. And there are a lot of times that I want to hear the information. I want the information that somebody's presented, but I don't have the hour to sit and actually listen or watch. So I'll run it through Sonics and then I've got the transcript and I can read it in about, 5 to 10 minutes, which really, like Daniela says, saves so much time. And then like with Pit Stop, I put the Pit Stop episode on Narrator's Roadmap along with that transcript because we all take in information different ways. And plus I'm able to add links to the transcript. And so it adds value that way. But anyway, I just wanted to pass that on for whatever help it can be. And I'm closely watching the clock because I know you said you're in the middle of this book and you've got to get back to it. And I'm so thrilled you could be with us today. I have a question that I call the Pit Stop Hot Seat. So this is not one of the questions that you know about. So if I gave you a penny to throw in a wishing well, what would you wish for? I might even give you a quarter. And I don't know if that would depend on, that would make the wish better.
Good health. For me and my husband.
That sounds like a wonderful wish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or I could just get up and start walking and eating well. Sleeping But let's count on the wish.
Well, we have talks about this all the time about manifesting things and name it and claim it and keeping focused on that goal of what you want and not, in fact, that's what I think you named my cup of Joe call of focus on what you want and not what you don't want.
Well, weirdly, I wanted to tell you this. I just never got a chance. You know, that trial I said that I'm on with the virtual reality thing, I had just sent you a message saying, well, I've been reading a lot about manifesting, listening, but I haven't actually tried any lately. And I'm going to like learn everything and then do it perfectly someday. But I was thinking, I'm just going to manifest. And I'd been thinking that for the last like few days after I messaged you that I'm just going to manifest a perfect world where I get to escape and everything's calm. And then my friend sent me a message going, hey, there's this trial. There's one day left. Do you want to try and see if you can get in? And this was it. And literally, a headset with the perfect world that lets me escape
from
everything. The
perfect world. Wow.
Like you couldn't make that up.
Well, and see, that's the thing about manifesting. You can't control how it shows up for you or when it shows up for you. And things generally don't show up for us on our timeline. And they may not look like what we thought they would, and they may not come in the direction we thought they'd come. And so you have to be open to how the universe fulfills those wishes. And so, like, when you first say a perfect world, well, if we actually meant this earth that we live on and all the 7 billion or however many people who were here getting together in peace and harmony, there's a lot that the universe has to do to conspire to make that happen. And I don't know if can happen, and it may not happen in our lifetimes. But so the universe hears Daniela say, I want a perfect world. And what happens? But here's a virtual headset where you can have that perfect world. I mean, I love this story.
I'm totally happy with that. I mean, I just figure all the rest of those people can all get headsets themselves. This was fine with me. But I'm really curious. I'm really curious about this because I'm very type A. And
no, really? And
I mean this as a compliment, but I have a feeling that Anne might be a tiny bit type A as well.
Oh, complete on steroids. Yes.
She's not even the same tiny bit.
But I'm wondering how you feel what, because I know, I know Karen is 100% right, but I find it so hard for my little type A brain to wrap around. And I'm curious how you feel when Karen reminds us that getting what you want might not be in the time you want it or in the way you expect to see it, because you don't have any control over it.
I know it to be true. I know it to be true, sadly, you know, because she tells me that all the time, and I've lived long enough that I see it. And
well, let me just say, she tells me that now too. So she does. Go on.
Yeah. I drank the Kool-Aid.
Go on.
Yeah.
Well, that's but it. Do you feel like fighting against it? Do you feel like
no?
Really?
No. I have learned. I've learned many, many lessons. And your whole thing about manifestation, Daniela, because I remember you from when I just saw a lady that was talking about videos and calls and things. And I thought, oh, where did she come from? You know, how just people just suddenly appear. And then it's like they were always here and they become more and more and more and more and more and more and more because you were doing your thing more and more and more. And it was manifesting from your consciousness to, I'll just say, I'll be everybody to, you know, let me stand in for every man, because that's, I think, the way that these things work. You had kind of made a public, you must have put yourself in a public place where I could see you. You see what I mean? Rather than doing whatever you're doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of declared your intention to the universe in the fact that I saw you and heard about you. And then I couldn't stop seeing and hearing about you in the most delightful way.
And I love that you say that.
What?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I love that you say that, because that is how I feel. Like that's, mm-hmm. and that's the cup of Joe. And that's why I started all the narrator groups, because it's like, I feel like I'm shouting, like, we're all a big, look at us. Aren't we doing great? We're this like big pool. And it's not just narrators or the narrator community. It's actors, writers. Look at us. Look what we're doing. Aren't we brave? Aren't we amazing? And then everyone's like, what? Who? What? And I feel like we're all in this together. Like,
well, speaking for myself, you are kind of the mother of a great deal of all this good stuff and goodness too, because you are one of my models and icons. Because
you're our icon.
No, you've done
million books though, Anne. You're like, I remember I literally almost gasped when you told me how many books you'd done. So
I know, but it's a shame though that they're not all, you know, here and now. And there was a questionnaire thing I was filling in, and it's 27 years I have been narrating audiobooks, folks.
Wow.
27 years. Heck of a long time. No, but this isn't about me. It's about you and how you came into my consciousness. And there's just something just so extra special and magical about you when you doing things and saying things and putting out an energy that I wasn't aware of before.
And that's really true, because she said those exact words to me. And that, because I'm like, what? Who are you talking about? And so she told me all of this, and I started seeing your shows. Yeah. And so I'm a testimonial. I have a testimonial that what she says is exactly how it happened.
Oh, I love
she told me, and then I've told people, and that's how it's gone.
But it's much the same. I mean, like, I think I heard Karen's name the day I started audiobooks. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like, you don't hear audiobooks without knowing about Karen Cummins. I'm saying that right?
That's so true. I'm so proud of you. Thank you.
And the roadmap now, which wasn't always there, but it is now.
Yeah. I know. And you guys have all these shows, and you're like, I mean, you're like the badasses of like the podcast world now. And it's so funny, because you were just like, I'm setting my intention. I'm doing this podcast now. And now you guys are like old school.
Anne's like show will be a year old in November.
Yeah.
So yeah, next month she's got a year.
But how
seems like much longer.
It does. It does. How many years have you been doing your show, Daniela? More to the point.
Two.
Oh, it's got like to be longer than that.
I think it was April 2020.
And you were having calls and things though before all of that.
Yeah. But just like a month before. And the thing about the calls, I mean, I had one recently, but the calls, the old school calls, they are great fun. And they're really, really something, but they're also really, really intense. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I need a nap for 3 days after one of those calls. Like, it's really cathartic, but really exhausting. And so it's easier for me to do the guest calls because the focus is on someone else.
So when you have these calls that are so taking so much out of you, what, not to get into the specifics, but why is that happening? What's going on?
It's weird because it's not so much what's said. It's that people are completely let down any defenses. They're with total strangers, but they're completely raw. And they're very good at it because I think they set, so usually somebody that's been on one sets the example and then everyone else follows, and they're completely raw and vulnerable. And sometimes they'll talk about dry spells. Sometimes they'll talk about they're so excited. They've got this leap in their career, which you're like afraid to post about because you don't want to make people feel bad. You don't want to come across all the, you don't want to come across as this, all the social media guards are off. It's, you know, sick child, this is going on right now, I don't feel well, can I keep doing this? Am I good enough? I've just been diagnosed with such and such. So you never know what's going to happen. Each call is different, and it feels good. It feels really, really good because you put out, you lay down what's heavy or even what's light. You bring it out and celebrate it. And it, I think it's like massive exercise for your soul, I like to think, but it is, but I don't, and I don't really talk about my, like my own stuff, but I like try to kind of interject and like manage between the people. So, but I feel like to be open to kind of like not managing, how what's the name of somebody
directing
that just, facilitating
facilitating, that's the word, to be open to facilitating something like that, you have to be open to it, you have to take on that energy, and once you take on that energy, you're, it's exhausting, it's valuable, worthwhile, good for you, but it's really tiring.
And I think that's one of your challenges, though, too. It's a gift and it's a challenge in that you're almost a psychic sponge because, you know, you are so open to all of these vibrations and sensitivities. And that is exhausting, Daniela, yes.
But it's exhausting putting
in
on...
In a good way, yeah.
It's because the rest of the world seems to have been given instruction in how to not be open. And the rest of the world has all these guards and things, and I don't have them.
Right.
And I don't understand them, and keeping them up or pretending that it's that's exhausting. So getting on a Joe call with a stranger and just like, let's get rid of all this crap. You're you, I'm me. Oh my God, you're amazing. Look at what you've done. Tell me about it. It's so easy for me because I don't have to pretend to be like, okay, you're a stranger. I have to act a certain way around you because I don't know you very well. Do you know what I mean? I can't, I'm not good with boundaries. And on those calls, I'm in charge, so I don't have to pretend I have boundaries.
And
we don't need them either.
I know I promised you that we would have a hard stop and we're coming up close on the time, but I can't let you get away without asking you if you have advice you can share with other people who want to expand their horizon beyond narration.
My advice is work from the inside out, not the outside in. Like, I wouldn't have, I don't think the Cup of Joe has, I think we're almost at 50,000 views.
And wow. Congratulations.
In the internet world, that's like nothing. And I keep forgetting to ask for subscribers. So it's like nothing on that too. But I consider it a success because we're still booked out for a year. And I consider it a success. But I don't think it would have been a success if I'd created the Cup of Joe so I could increase my career and make some secondary income. Because I did it for different reasons, because of the love of it, like you would a hobby or something. a lot of, and I'm not saying don't, you can't get a secondary income or, and do a side gig, but, and I've had a lot of friends that are like, equally, you've got the roadmap and you've got all this stuff, but you equally love it. You love doing it. So you're still doing it for the love of it and just being smart about business, right? You can marry the two, but I think that the love comes first. Mm-hmm.
And it's such a perfect way of saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The love comes first. I've had chances to make the cup of Joe bigger, to go into partnership with people and to make money. And each time I've felt stressed out by it and I've listened to my gut and I'm glad I did, because it would have taken me away from my focus, which is my books, which is narrating. And so I think you have to really, it has to come from the inside out, and you're making the choices for what you want deep down, not what you think you have to do to be a successful person in the industry. It's got to be coming from your heart, I think, which sounds woo-woo, but.
No, it's spot on. And it used to be so much easier to be that way until there was social media and there were so many people and there were, you know, people could just do what they did and nobody knew anything about it. It was just wide open to be whatever you wanted it to be.
But I still think it is. I still think it is, because, for instance, the Cup of Joe, all of a sudden people were starting not Clubhouse, not you guys, but other people were starting webinars and this and that, and it was like a thing, and of course, and the outside world wants you to do more of something or do things their way or change this, and I rejected it and ignored the outside world and including social media. I just ignored it, and I kept doing what I wanted to do with it. And the reason was because I was more worried about my career success as a narrator. I wasn't worried. I would, like, from the beginning, I would cancel Cup of Joe tomorrow if it stopped being healthy or feeling good for me. Mm-hmm. So I didn't fall for that. And because it is everywhere, and I think it's the kiss of death. But I think that if we put our heads down, it's January Lavoie went off social media completely. And she said it took like a week of horrible, like, withdrawal, but she felt better afterwards, because I think we have the power to not care. We have the power to just let the noise stay outside of us. You are a veteran, well-respected narrator. I mean, people bow down to someone at your level. So, but it's the truth. This is not hyperbole. It's the truth. I mean, of course, you're not going to think of yourself that way. Well, I'm the queen bee, but we all know it. Karen will back me up on that. We all know that about
her. She
you.
Is.
Oh, no, yeah. No. All I'm saying is I can remember when we didn't have all of this, you know what I mean? It was just a time.
But people would assume that you are one of the people that wouldn't even notice social media, because we all know what level you're at. Do you see what I'm saying? But every single person is feeling like they have to pay attention to it, but they don't. So many people have earned their stripes. You don't need it. Mm-hmm. You know, only go on it for the fun. It doesn't matter if everyone's looking at what everyone else is doing online.
Well, when you're saying exactly what I'm saying, Danielle, in a different way. I can completely cut out social media from my life because I had a whole career before it ever was even a thing. Mm-hmm. So, but which makes my rejection of it, if that was to be, not any great, there'd be no great price to pay for that. Whereas you've known different, and you are making different choices based in a different world than my habits and whatever were formed from, which makes your triumph all the greater.
Aww. Oh, you're so nice.
That's what I'm trying to get across to you. No, and you are the pattern for all of us. Well, I speak for myself, for my talking head anyway. You are my icon in that, 100%.
See, after the first call I had with Anne, I called Anna. I was because I didn't know Anne, and I met her at an APA kind of online social, and you were like, "Oh, we should chat." I'm like, "Okay." I didn't know. I don't know anyone. As I've already said, I'm very bad with names, and so even the people I know, I'm bad with names. Took me 3 years to get Karen's surname right. So I got on the call with Anne just because she's a really nice, fun person. And you were like, and I was like, oh, I don't know how do I put this? And I remember you were the person that stopped me being silly, reaching out to publishers. I'm like, how many books do I put down? If I have this book, but mine is this book, what do I put? And Anne's like, I don't know. I'm like, how many books do you have? She's like, oh, 65,000. And I'm like,
I never said that.
What? I know, but it was some like really big number. And after the call, I called Anna Clements, or I messaged Anna Clements. I was like, oh my God, I just met with the nicest person on earth. And she's like done more books than But see what I'm saying, though? It's the Karens and the Anns of this world.
And the Danielas. Yes.
And the Mies, that we're carving out our own spaces.
Yeah.
And we're decorating it the way we want them to look.
That's it.
Faux fur.
And leopard. Love the leopard.
And that sounds like a great place to stop, since I did promise you we'd have a hard stop 3 minutes ago.
I've got to finish this book. I'm trying to learn how to speak like the Aboriginal people speak, and nothing's pronounced the way it's spelled.
The Aboriginals of where, Daniela?
Oh God, I don't know at this point. We're talking polyps and coral and the Aborigines, and I'm not a scientist, so at this point I'm just like,
and this is nonfiction, obviously.
This is nonfiction. It's a beautiful book. It's a beautiful book, but wow, this woman's got some vocabulary.
Well, you will too at the end of it,
right?
Yeah. So I'd better go devote time to it.
Well, before you do, if we can have one more minute, do you have anything to plug or final words, and how should people contact you?
I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm around.
YouTube.
YouTube. All over YouTube.
Come join us on a Cup of Joe call. And if you're a narrator, have you joined the Narrator's Cup of Joe on Facebook? Because you get links to all the calls as they come up a few days before the call. And if you haven't joined it, why not? And that's it.
You're really missing out if you don't join.
And lots of videos soon to be added once I catch up.
Yeah.
And on that happy note, it is time for everyone to get back on the road. So we're going to conclude today's pit stop. The recording will be available on Clubhouse later today, and next week probably I'll put a transcript and the recording on narratorsroadmap.com. And Pit Stop is also available on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple and Audible. And who is coming up tomorrow on Narrator Uplift?
It's Chris Shula.
Oh, wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I love Chris.
Yeah. And I hope you'll all take another road trip with us on October 26th, when we'll talk with Andrew Tell, who's an author, narrator, and software developer. In the meantime, I hope you find joy in every journey and live the life of your dreams. Thank you again to Daniela Accitelli for this wonderful, sparkling conversation.
Yay!
Thank you so much, you guys. I was so honored to be invited.
Oh, we love you.
Yes, we do.
We love you. We love you. Be well.
Yes.
Okay.
And thanks as always to Anne Flosnick for your wonderful discussions and support, and to all of you for spending time with us today. I hope you have a wonderful week, and we will see you soon.